Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the musical chairs in the Kremlin, where the power behind the throne, Vladimir Putin, is stepping out of the shadow of his puppet Medvedev, the current president, to reassume the role as the next president of Russia, a role he never really relinquished. Nina Khrushcheva, a relative of a former Soviet leader and a professor of international relations at the New School, joins us for a reading of the latest Kremlin tea leaves. Then Bob Stern, the president of the Center for Governmental Studies, joins us to look into how a crooked local accountant looted the campaign funds of a lot of the prominent Democratic politicians in California, including Senator Feinstein and Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, leaving many Democratic office holders vulnerable for re-election in 2012. Then finally, we will speak with Adam Winkler, professor of constitutional law at UCLA, and author of the new book, Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. We will discuss an untold history Adam Winkler's book reveals that explodes the myth of the Wild West and finds that the Ku Klux Klan began as a gun control organization and that the modern gun rights movement was inspired by fear of the Black Panthers. Joining us now is Nina Khrushcheva, who is Professor of International Affairs at the Graduate Program at the New School and a Senior Fellow at the World Policy Institute. She is also an editor and contributor to Project Syndicate Association of Newspapers Around the World. She was a research fellow at the School of Historical Studies at the Institute for Advanced Studies at Princeton, then served as deputy editor of Eastern European Constitutional Review at the NYU School of Law and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Dr. Khrushcheva is the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics, and is currently finishing a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nina Khrushcheva.
Thank you.
And clearly this little sort of shadow game, I refer to it as musical chairs in the Kremlin, how much do you think the West is gullible into believing there actually was some, that Putin wasn't really in charge all along, and that somehow that Medvedev was something more than some window dressing to make the West feel as if there was, you know, somebody out there that was championing modernization and legal reform and was friendly to the West?
I think that the West was pretty aware of what was going on. But what I find very interesting is that although everybody knew who really is in charge and who is the puppet who doesn't pull any strings, which is the President Medvedev, I think it's what really surprises me is the desire for being delusional. And every time when Medvedev would speak on modernization or would promise to confront legal nihilism or fight corruption or go tweet with Steve Jobs or have hamburgers with Barack Obama, somehow that immediately became a sign, oh, he must be a real thing, and that's really good for Russia. That's what absolute clarity for everybody, but the desire to be duped was, that I find very, very interesting in this whole latest development when everybody knew that Putin was coming back. I think there was a hope that he won't, but clearly if you know a bit of Russian politics, or Russian history, you would not be thinking differently. He was to come back. And in fact, I was actually remembering an anecdote today from 2008, very quickly after Medvedev became president, is that it's 2025 and Putin and Medvedev are sitting in a restaurant and Putin says, oh, I forgot, who is paying now? And Medvedev said, oh, I was just reelected back into president, so it's my turn. So, I mean, the public culture, political culture, already knew in 2008 that would happen. And the fact that we are considering it news today is a bit surprising to me.
And you wrote, Nina Khrushcheva, in a piece that you had back in June, Will the Meek Inherit Russia? You mentioned here that U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was in Moscow in March, where he tried to convince Putin to surrender his presidential ambitions for 2012. Apparently, the rumor is that he offered Putin important international positions, such as chairing the International Olympic Committee or even leading the United Nations. What happened to that? Obviously, it didn't work.
It was a rumor. I mean, I don't know what had happened. That was a very persistent rumor. Joe Biden actually did go to Moscow and did meet with Putin and actually talked to Putin on the phone, which for prime minister really should, it's not really prime ministerial job to talk to Joe Biden. So, and also we know that Joe Biden is a very big proponent of Russian democratic development. So there must be something to it, although we don't know exactly whether it happened or not. Well, it clearly happened nothing, but as I wrote in that piece, if Putin really doesn't step aside, which, you know, I sort of assumed that he wouldn't, Lavrentiy Beria's fate awaits him, and I still think it does. Lavrentiy Beria, he was Stalin's secret police chief that when Stalin died and Khrushchev took over, Beria died the death that he sent many, many people to when he was in charge of the secret police. That is, he was accused of being a German spy and died a horrible death. And I think Putin sort of strengthened the hand of various illegal formulas. That is, you can switch presidents, you can put people in prison, and I'm referring to Khodorkovsky, exactly, the UKOS had the oil. So he created a system that in order to get rid of him, would actually have to do something really horrible to him. But clearly, like all Russian czars before him, he's incapable of stepping aside, and he's going to be there until the bitter end. And it really doesn't, doesn't give any good promise, because eventually, if it is another 12 years, I'm sorry, because when Medvedev became president, he, first order of business, he amended the constitution to the new term, which is now 6 years, and you can run for two terms. I mean, you can be elected for two terms, which is another 12 years. Everybody knew that Medvedev wasn't doing it for himself. Who wants Medvedev for 12 more years in Russia? He was doing it for Putin, so he did. So we will have Putin for another 12 years, and I mean, I predict, and it's a horrible prediction, but I do know my Russia, I predict some sort of rebellion. I mean, you know, 1917, 1991 are really not something that you should disregard as historical precedents.
And Nina Khrushchevi, in this article that I'm quoting from that you wrote, you're saying that the current regime is clearly autocratic, yet it aspires to democratic legitimacy in the eyes of the Russian citizens and in the international community, and that clearly is, to some extent, the role that Medvedev was playing here in this shadow game. But you also say that, as in Soviet times, the main task of today's ruling elite, Putin and his former KGB associates, is to preserve their tight-knit political and economic regime built for their personal control and material benefit. Russian foreign policy is, as it was under the Soviets, an extension of official domestic priorities.
Which, you know, I still stand by those words, and in fact, sort of to go back to your original opening of this segment, is that, you know, the musical chairs, Medvedev is now going to be prime minister. I mean, his rhetoric is very soothing. He does talk about modernization. He does talk about technology. He is, he certainly communicates better with democratic leaders. He is not an autocrat Putin is a type of an autocrat. Medvedev is not an autocrat. So Putin does need him as prime minister to soften the image. But at the same time, especially with economy doing badly in all countries, including Russia, he does need, or so he says, or so he presents, he does need the firmer reins in his hands, because clearly his hands are much firmer than Medvedev. So basically what they are now promoting is that it's going to be better for everyone, because Putin has stronger reins, but Medvedev could be much better as prime minister, because he can do his economic things that he's strong at. I mean, he would have better opportunity to meet the promises that he did. That is, he can deal with law, he can deal with corruption, he can deal with economics, which is the job of prime minister.
Again, I'm speaking with Nina Kusheva, Professor of International Affairs in the graduate program at the New School and a senior fellow of the World Policy Institute. So the picture I get from other people and indeed from you, Nina, is that what's going on in Russia today is that Putin sort of regulates a cadre of KGB people that he promoted along with himself, and that they in turn regulate the oligarchs. And that if you get out of line, like Khodorkovsky did, you'll go to jail. So that seems to be the system. Now, is he? Why does he need to be in charge of the system? Why doesn't he just go to Switzerland or go? You know, live off all the billions that these other guys have looted from the state?
Look, I ask myself that every day. Why does he go to Switzerland and just do what Switzerland does? Good question. I mean, you know, it's Russia. That's what we do. We have enormous territory. We've been an empire, and I still say we have been, and as in kind of a lengthy present tense, because the mentality is still there. And once you take power in an empire, you just never let it go. I mean, you know, we had only three precedents in history, really. One was Khrushchev, but he was ousted, although he claimed that he would leave. He wanted to leave in 65. Well, we don't know because he was ousted in 64. Then Gorbachev, whose power was also taken away from him. And the only person who really gave up power on his own was Boris Yeltsin, who in 2000 actually gave it to Putin, the rumor goes that he couldn't really be in the Kremlin anymore for various reasons, including health. So it's a very good question, but that's not how it's done. I mean, you know, the thing about Putin is that he does things in a very predictable way, the way it has been done historically and certainly throughout Soviet history.
But what explains, you touched on Yeltsin, it's often forgotten that it was Yeltsin appointed as Yeltsin's national security advisor and then became his handpicked successor. And I've always been puzzled why a very junior KGB fellow who largely worked in Germany, which was not a prize KGB posting, it wasn't in the West, he never had a very distinguished career. How did this guy get that job, and then how did he become, you know, the boss of the bosses, you know, the capo di capo? How did he become the leader of this clique of KGB people who run KGB Incorporated, otherwise known as Russia?
Well, it's sort of an amazing thing that you're coming back to that. I feel like, you know, in 12 years since Putin been around, I've written anything that there is to say about him. Mm. I think Yeltsin picked him because he seemed like he was a quiet executioner. I mean, I don't mean cutting heads, although he does do that now. But at the time, he was just the guy who you would send him for beer and he would bring it. That's how he appeared. And so Yeltsin picked him for that. I mean, you know, with all my respect to Yeltsin for many things, it was a very corrupt government, very corrupt family, and so their millions had to be protected by somebody, and they made a deal with Putin, who was so it was a very convenient, so that this KGB guy, former KGB guy, comes in, he seems quiet, he just seemed to be, he would just keep Yeltsin's, with no initiative, he would keep Yeltsin's formulas intact, and protect the family fortunes. But of course, in 2000, and I remember, it's remarkable how we all want to be delusional about Russian politics, although there is no delusions left, or illusions left for that matter. You know, Stalin, not that I compare them directly, Stalin came into power the same way. Why, Nikolai Bukharin and Trotsky, they were all fighting over the ministerial position. Stalin was very good executioner. He was walking around the Kremlin corridors, and the only thing he was doing, he was just bringing papers from one office to another. And by the time Trotsky and Bukharin and all those other bright stars of the Bolsheviks finished dividing their ministerial positions, oops, it was too late. Stalin was already there. And, you know, both very quiet, both good executions, both very, seemed very uneventful and quite dull, and yet look what happened. I mean, Stalin has been in power for 30 years, and Putin, I bet, will, if he's not ousted, he will stay there for that long.
And you're suggesting, Nina Khrushcheva, that the difference here, when you, we talk about Stalin and Putin, the fundamental difference is that this clique that are running Russia now, they don't want to completely divorce themselves from the West because that's where their money is and where they have holiday villas and where.
Well, of course, but I mean, it's not as I said, it's not a direct comparison.
No, but on the other hand, they want to prevent Russia's integration with the West because that would mean the end of their regime. That's
absolutely. They want the state to keep as it is. But, I mean, it has been, since Stalin, it has been 50 years, more than 60 years, will be 50, 60 years. It's absolutely not the same. I mean, the book that I'm writing now is The Gulag of the Russian Mind. I mean, we don't really need barbed wire to keep us away from the world. We just do it ourselves. And, you know, and then Putin is a good example. We do it ourselves. So it's different. There is no idea. I mean, Putin doesn't really have ideology. I'm like Stalin, who was a devoted communist and especially believer in communism in one separately taken country. Putin doesn't believe that. I mean, they use strength as a tool. They don't use it as an ideological ideological necessity.
Well, just in closing, Nina, then the question I have when you talk about delusions about Russia and how we don't want to look at the truth in a harsh light, in many ways, when it comes to Putin, it's pretty hard to look at the truth in hard ways because there are some really disturbing questions about his role in what precipitated the second Chechen War, those apartment buildings that blew up that are still very mysterious, his attitudes and statements about Anna Politkovskaya, who was murdered on his birthday, he apparently gave the order to take the theater, and where all those Russians died as collateral damage because the compound they used, the gas, was a state secret. They didn't bother to revive these people, which they could have easily done. And there's a whole bunch of things about, and of course, not to mention the polonium. Use of radioactive isotope to kill an enemy in London. There's no direct fingerprints on this, but there's a hell of a lot of circumstantial evidence that he somehow is, you know, as opposed to George Bush's idea, he looked into the eyes of Putin. I think there's a good case to be made that this guy's a killer.
Well, but I mean, it's, I you know, for me, it's prove it and then, but it, what that's going back to our earlier discussion is that he created a system. I mean, that's what you described as whether he's guilty of direct orders or not. He created a system that is not only undemocratic, but is a gangster killer, modern version of KGB system, and that is a terrifying prospect, and that in fact a reason why, you know, I believe in some way he can't leave, because if he does go, that system is certainly going to finish him. So he has to stay there and make sure that he's in control of that horror, and of course the side product of this is it is going to get only more horrible. No, I mean, but at the same time, the question for the West, what the West can do. And once he has this very cute little mini-me First Lady Medvedev right next to him, the West can do even less because Medvedev comes out and speaks English and says all the right things. And, you know, the double speak that Orwell spoke mm-hmm. out so eloquently is part of our culture, but it's really not part of the Anglo-Saxon world and English culture or many other cultures. So I think we're all stuck, really, for some time until the revolution comes.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us. And when is your book, The Lost Khrushchev Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind, coming out?
Well, hopefully in a year. I'm still finishing it.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I want to talk to you when that comes out, but maybe yes, I'll talk to you before then.
Okay, all right.
thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Nina Khrushcheva, Professor of International Affairs and a graduate program at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how a crooked accountant apparently has maybe even affected the re-election chances of a whole lot of Democratic office holders in the state of California.